There always must be progression. The only thing that has any value to it is something that we're about to do. Folks, this is a cult. This is an ideology. The very thought that something that I'm about to do is the only thing that has any value to it, and that all that has come, that has gone before, has no value, dude, that's how you get Nazis and communists. That's how you get famines in Ukraine. That's how you get hundreds of millions dead and killed intentionally by authoritarian nutbags. Really, they're not authoritarian nutbags. They're ideologues. And they convince enough people around them to be ideologues. No, we must progress. We must war against all that's gone before. But what if what went before was good? Here, let me give you an example of something that went before us that is a good. The crucifixion. You want a war against that? Today you did the joyful mysteries. This all happened before us. The incarnation, the visitation, the nativity, the perpetual virginity, that all happened before us. It predates us. You throw all of that at, well, if you're axing Beelzebub and the boys and those that are married to progressive, hell yeah, you throw it out. Folks, ladies and gents, dudes, this is why you cannot reclaim most of those institutions that they have had their precious long march through. Ask one of them what they want to do with it once they made their long march through it. Ask them if they want any of us to still be in their institutions as us. And the answer is going to be, no, we only want people that gush, and we're going to keep progressing. Well, there's your answer with what to do. Get out. All right, well, then you can have it. It's all yours. This is common sense. This is just applying a little logic to it, looking at the scenario, making the judgment call that those people are going to have to save themselves. You, by remaining, are providing the grace that keeps the institution going. If you leave, it will become the den of evil. It will become populated by all of them. They won't have anything to war about. They'll start eating themselves. It will ultimately collapse. Demonic institutions don't last. They cannot endure. Why? Because they are based on an error. You start off with an error. Unless you correct it, you end with an error. This is from the Imaginative Conservative website. Old men forget what is now hallowed was once new and shocking. This is by David Deevil. Now, I already know because I threw this out on the Gab. I threw this out on the Twitter. I put it in the chat room earlier today. It's in today's pile of prep. I already know that most of you listening right now could give a poop about this. You want the red meat. You want to talk about Rittenhouse. You want to scream and holler and get all fired up. Get all angry and agitated about Paul Gosar and AOC and all that. Just bread and circuses, man. If you really want to tackle the issue, and if you really want, or you want to be part of the solution, you have to actually start acting. There are people out there that are actually acting. If you want to look, last night Glenn Beck claimed he saved the world. You didn't see it on the Twitter? I'm going to finally expose on you, boob, he said. He had the chalkboard out and everything. I didn't watch it. I saw it on Twitter. And I'm sure that many, look, bread and circuses, panem et circenses, works for a little while. David Deevil here has He's got it. He put his finger on it. Now, he didn't make the one connection that needs to be made. Maybe he'll make it next time he writes about this. He's writing about young people who are conservative and geezeroids like me who are purported to be conservative. And he's wondering, like the young people call me a boomer or a zoomer. But he's wondering, why are many young conservatives not only are they gravitating towards a different kind of conservatism, they're also gravitating to a different religious life. And he's wondering, why do I keep meeting all these young people that are going to this thing called the TLM, the Traditional Latin Mass? Why are they running around quoting Aquinas to me? I'm the egghead scholar. The reason why is because they've discovered truth. Truth has a resonation to it, obviously, that error doesn't. There is a piece at the, again, at the Brownstone Institute. I didn't bring it on because it's deep intellectual discussion. It just bore most of you to tears. But the guy tries to draw the distinction away. This is an entire generation now that lives its life predicated upon doubt and error. They doubt that there is a God, and that leads them to error, and they accept the error. And they just continue doubting. There is no certitude. The young conservatives are seeking certitude. Here's Deevil. Generational differences are often exaggerated, but I've always thought them useful. Are young liberals and conservatives different from their elders? I think it's obvious that the young wokesters differ from the older libs in significant ways that are often terrifying to the oldsters. When many of our proto-woke silent generation and boomer libs said to stick it to the man, they seemed never to have seriously considered that they would ever be the man to whom it was being stuck, or that the younger generation would not even be able to say what a man is. You ever thought about that? Stick it to the man. But wait a minute. Can't we just stick it to the it? Do we have to cisgender it? Do you see how their error puts, it just takes something. This is one of their canards. Stick it to the man. We don't use pronouns to stick things to. Similarly, many conservatives found the perfect three-legged stool in Reaganite fusionism, never dreamed that there would be challenges to a view of the world that was liberal, but aware of the illiberal foundations necessary for a liberal polity and a kind of modified liberal philosophy to survive. I think sometimes that my slightly older friends and colleagues are mystified as to why younger people are turning away from the more traditional conservatism that characterized so much of the Republican Party and the world of think tanks over the last few decades. That devotion to keeping the institutions going while trimming back excesses that characterizes the conservatism of the last few decades is now derided by many younger conservatives who refer to it as conservative ink. So there's a conservative ink and there is a trad ink, I believe. If you'd like to talk about this actual subject, you could go to the Crusader Stadium chat room, crusadechannel.com/chat. The chat room was meant to be interactive for the hosts and the chatters. Like when Fiorella asks questions and then reads the responses. For example, In a, back to David Deevil at the Imaginative Conservative. In a recent discussion, a stalwart older scholar claimed, to my surprise, that one of the Catholic academic guilds to which we both belong ought to reject the traditional Latin Mass. So, now, look at what Deevil is referring to here now. Some of your Trad Inc. older people are going, hey, wait a minute. I never signed up to be a promoter of sacred tradition here. I just said we ought to act all Catholic EE and stuff from time to time, but we owe all our allegiance to Burke and Goldwater and Kirk and Reagan and Sewell and all the rest. Well, we're not doing that Chesterton, Augustine Aquinas thing there, pal. Deevil continues. Old men forget, Henry V says in Shakespeare's famous speech, yet I've come to think that the problem with old men is not that they forget, but that they cannot forget. Specifically, they cannot forget the battles that raged when they were in their 20s and 30s. Many conservatives, silent generation and boomer vintage, found that in Reagan, John Paul II, and Billy Graham, a political and religio-cultural modus vivendi, had been reached. No longer would conservative be reactionary. They would make a kind of peace in politics with the New Deal and the administrative state, and even to a certain extent, the Great Society. They would make peace with what is good in the Enlightenment, feminism, liberalism, ever-expanding human rights, and all the rest. Making sense of the modern world, even though it could not do so itself. I don't mock the desire, Mr. Deevil writes. The conservative impulse is not to reject anything good, even if it comes from Ted Kennedy or Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Bernie. Conservatives avoid the temptation of the ad hominem fallacy. And yet, the way in which this impulse was worked out bespoke a certain cultural confidence. Conservatives, even in the hated 60s, often assumed that we shared the same general mental and spiritual world as those who were on the other side of issues. See, now, this is what really has changed. The young conservative now is tuned in to the good versus evil, devil versus angel, grace versus sin. That's me saying this. That's a good thing because that's where the battle actually is waged. It is not waged in intellectual circles. It is not waged in smoking rooms. Well, it can be. It is not waged with this paper and this book versus this one. It is waged in what Chesterton called the democracy of the dead. We should draw heavily from. Brother Andre and I talked about this yesterday. Russell Kirk says, stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, are there giants we can stand on their shoulders? Yes. But we're told, yeah, but that was then, this is now. You can't apply that to the 21st century. Bull effing Walter. Yes, you can. So Mr. Deevil here is actually writing a pretty good screenplay of what's going on today. Now, it's small, but here's the thing. It's ubiquitous. I've seen it in England. I've seen it in France. I went. I've seen it in New Hampshire. I've seen it in Florida. I've read about it in many other places. Kennedy Hall's on this channel every day with the Kennedy Profession. I hear and see it in Canada. It's universal. It's ubiquitous. Why? Because that truth is universal. It should be ubiquitous. Okay, here. We assume that the classical liberalism that we wanted to preserve in practice, if not entirely in theory, was still operative. It provided a kind of marquee of Queensberry rules that would prevent the other side from low blows, or at least from ultimate victory via those low blows. That might made a kind of sense in a world of anti-communist figures like Dan Moynihan and Scoop Jackson. Younger conservatives do not have that confidence. This is why they are increasingly open to ideas that go beyond simply using the liberal processes available within government and law while working to influence the culture around them. It's not that these are wrong means. Younger conservatives just see them as utterly insufficient. They are much more open to rethinking things in a very large scale way because they see that much of the institution and procedural life we have now is either collapsing or has collapsed already. It is significant that one of the major conservative initiatives of the last year, one that is working to connect conservative businesses to other businesses, workers, and customers, is called New Founding. By the by, that is exactly what is being worked on behind the proverbial scenes right here amongst many of you listeners at the Crusade Channel. The talk at the Red Pill Expo, PMAs, private membership associations. You know, we're going to have a little, if we could put the meeting together tomorrow afternoon, we're going to have a little meeting about this online, and we're going to talk about kicking this thing off and doing it. I was in a meeting yesterday with a bunch of very young conservatives, the exact guys that David Diesel is mentioning. You know what these guys are doing? They're building an internet infrastructure that is completely free of big tech. Down to their own server farms, writing their own code, making their own social media places. Why? Because they see that they don't want to be in cahoots with those diabolical institutions. And they want to build something that is predicated and founded upon truth. Continuing now with David Diesel at Old Men Forget, what is now Howard was once new and shocking at the imaginative conservative. Younger conservatives are now thinking and speaking in different ways about politics, religion, economics, and education because they are racing to figure out how to operate in the world that is coming rather than the post-war world that is fast disappearing. I was reminded of this reality when an older academic friend whom I admire sent me a note about a piece that appeared in the Public Discourse by Nathaniel Blake of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Blake was questioning the way in which academic freedom has operated, asking why conservative constitutional scholar Robert George would defend his fellow Princeton professor Peter Singer's place at the academic table when Singer's philosophical talents are being used to defend the cult of death that Professor George is himself fighting against. Blake was suggesting that conservatives might reflect on and reconfigure what the boundaries on academic freedom should be in the modern university, even in non-Christian and non-Catholic universities. Let me stop right here. We had this discussion yesterday, me and Brother Andre, about President Arbery and his challenge to the guy who wants to, who's founded the Austin Academy online, but who's based it on what? The Enlightenment. He's just cleaning the slate. He's getting rid of all the bad people. But President Arbery's point was, dude, you can do that. You're gonna fall right back into where these people have veered off into. You're going to be invaded by the bad guy. They're going to come in and gonna take over your new place. The only way you can put a wall up to protect it is to ground it in the truth. That is it. That is to ground it in the philosophy of Perennis, in the teaching, in the understanding, and the kingship of Christ. You do that, you build it upon that, You're not going to have a libtard in there arguing for murdering babies and sodomites, quote, marrying, close quote, one another. It's never going to come up because it's illegal. It's immoral, and the law supports that immorality, which used to be the law here in the United States. Sodomy was illegal in every state in the union all the way up until 1972. Did you know that? Back to Diesel. My friend thought this naive since it is Catholic, Christian, and conservative voices that are in most danger in our current situation. Openly allowing that academic freedom can be infringed would allow even more marginalization to take place. Better to fight for the freest speech possible on campuses. Besides, he reflected, it can be very difficult to figure out where to draw the boundaries in the first place. I'm all for academic freedom, and I would certainly sign any document supporting it, but the reality is that we are beyond the point where such protest has much power. Blake is correct that the kind of appeals to freedom based on academic rigor don't really deal with the fact the current standards of scholarship generally get reduced to whether we get the politically or academically correct answers. Most modern universities, even those that signed the Chicago Statement on Free Speech, end up drawing lines in a way that puts the same people on the defensive. And most of the rest of the institutions are quickly purging the remaining non-woke figures or making sure that none of them will ever be hired again. My colleague is probably right that Blake could be seen as naive, especially if we read him as talking about present institutions. But I tend to read Blake as thinking about what to do with new and future institutions. Now, see, this is the question. What do you do with the new institution? Let's say you go in and take one over. You actually get rid of all the bad people and you kick them out. Do you write a policy? Do you have a constitution? Do you have a creed? Maybe you have the creed.